respect to police staffing, the number of officers that are assigned to patrol now, the number that we need, and some strategies that are being used now and could potentially be used soon to address the need to cover that patrol obligation. So with that, everyone might not know everyone, so we'll go around the room.
Let's ask a question.
Sure.
I just want to, Chief, I believe that you briefed each office on this issue. And you and I recently met, we talked about staffing. Is the purpose of today to effectively expand on that briefing and put a little more meat on the bone? Is that the goal?
Yes, it is. So the first couple slides are just redundant for some folks on our overall staffing, where we're at. The remainder of the presentation drills down into our proposal for removing officers from special units to put on the street. So a little bit of review and then much more granular detail. Yeah. Zach, why don't you go ahead and dive in? I think everybody here knows everybody here, so we don't need to do introductions.
Okay.
Other than you can start with yourself.
Sure. Mayor, Council, thank you so much. Mike Marshman, Chief of Police. Thanks for the time today. We're here to talk about staffing, and I'm just going to jump into an incident that I believe we all know happened, two incidents actually, in the last couple of days. So I gave the mayor this morning some photos of the cache of weapons that we pulled off a gentleman in the East Precinct, as well as the sergeant that was shot last night in Gladstone. Fortunately, he's okay. So I say that not to politicize it, but that is, I think, a correlation as a barrier to try to get officers to come do law enforcement any place in the country, not just Portland. So with that stated, again, I apologize, it's a little bit redundant, but I believe right now, and I think some of the slides will show that we're understaffed in our patrol function. I think we're understaffed in the Bureau. And now our projected separations, either due to retirement or resignations to other law enforcement agencies, exceeds our hiring ability, which we'll talk about a little bit later on today. And probably most importantly, our limited staffing on the street and in the Bureau in general really, truly, I think, hurts our relationship-based policing efforts. To do relationship-based policing, it just simply takes time that we need to have officers, regardless of rank, have with the community. So I'm going to just jump into the slide presentation. I'm not sure who's controlling this slide.
We've got...
Oh, it's loading. Okay. Well, some of this is redundant. So back in 2013, Matrix did a staffing study for us. This is some of the redundant information we did at the Gator session. Since 2013 to now, we have data that shows the workload for officers is increasing. Policing in most cities, especially Portland, is just more complex in nature. And the time it takes for officers to handle those calls is also increasing. So it's a little bit of a compounding factor. With that data, back in 2013, if you have significant time an officer's day to do proactive policing, relationship-based policing, in 2013, Matrix surmised we needed 362 officers on the street. If you factor in change of population, some other factors, for 2016, that projects out to 448 officers on the street to do patrol, to effectively do community policing, some of our core functions. Currently, right now, we're about 330, so we're quite low. In your packet, again, I apologize, it's not on the screen, but we'll get there. We have an inverse relationship now. So back in 2003, our sworn staffing was over 1,000, and the population for Portland was lower than it is today. I think it's great now that the population for Portland's up to 632,000. There's a lot of positive reasons why that's growing. So that's not a bad thing. The part that the police bureau is having a problem with our core functions is our authorized staffing is about 100 less than that. It's about 950. But our actual staffing, due to having a hard time hiring and retirements and things of that nature, we're down to about 880 officers. So you have quite the inverse relationship with what I believe the residents of Portland expect the police bureau to do for them. And I agree with that. So again, our dispatch calls for service are up, our number of patrol officers are down. That translates into the workload for officers is increasing. We guesstimate about 36% of the officer's workload during the day is going up. Now, on its face, that's not bad, but I think where it can be problematic, again, is that free time for relationship-based policing. Also, police work across the United States is more complex, so it's not simply a call-for-call correlation. Just society, obviously, is more complex in general. So police work, the average call time to complete the call is 18% greater than it was back in 2013. So all these numbers kind of point towards we need, in my opinion, need more officers on patrol.
Chief, can you elaborate on a couple things? One is that I know the population is up, and obviously your calls are up, but my impression was the crime wasn't particularly up. So I'm wondering what kind of calls are you getting if they're not going to increase crime? And also, the idea that society is more complex, I actually don't understand that at all. So if you could explain what complex factors increase the length of that it takes to do calls, I'd appreciate that.
Yes, of course. Good question. So part one crimes, more the person crimes there, you know, they kind of tick up, tick down, fairly steady. But the property crimes are up. And that's citywide. So again, if we go into our a little bit of a tangential conversation of our NILOC work. So we took the city and broke it into 500 by 500 square foot grids. Some areas of the city crime is down, sure. Other areas, generally speaking, the more disenfranchised socioeconomic challenge communities, that crime is way up. The reason why I believe policing is more complex is for a couple of reasons. More, it's more livability, social disorder crimes. We're now just not going, taking the call, channeling it off to anybody. We expect our officers to stay there, help get social services there, help figure out more solutions than other, you're going to jail or you're not. We're having more of a social work function, which I think is good service for police to provide to the community. That complexity of options, jail diversion, assistance, waiting for responders to come to the scene to actually connect with the individual, that in general makes police work more complex today.
But, okay, compared to 2000, you've got 36% increase in dispatch calls per officer. By what percentage are property crimes up over the past few years?
Off the top of my head, I don't know that number. We could probably research it for you maybe during this presentation. I don't have all the crime type.
Calls per officer would go up with population growth, even if the crime rate were level.
That's true, too.
But if you adjusted the, and also you have fewer officers, but if you adjusted for the fewer officers, the total amount of dispatched calls is going up significantly, too. And, let's see, police calls per service and response time. Actually, wait a minute. Looking at this chart, it looks like there were 366,000 calls in 2012 and 367 in 2015-16. So that actually doesn't look like that dramatic an increase.
But on the bottom, the dispatch high priority tends to slowly be ticking up from 18-21. It's generally speaking, it's going up. And there's not one factor that crosses all the spectrums here. Like the mayor said, part of population is going up, which I think is good for the city. Number of officers assigned to work is not keeping up with the increased population rate.
Okay, but Chief, I mean, we've had this conversation about population before.
Right.
If there was no crime in a city of 6 million people, you wouldn't need that many police. I realize you get calls for social disorder things that aren't really crime, but I think that, the other thing, you were saying that things are more complex because people now expect you to put people in touch with social services. I think that 4 years ago, you were putting people in touch with social services. Are you doing that more now than you were 4 years ago?
I believe there's a higher expectation to do that, for sure. Plus, we also have, which again, I'll preface with, I think it's a good thing, we have better accountability metrics in place. And those take time to collect as well.
So you mean you've got more forms to fill out and things like that and reports to make?
That's one way to look at it, but we expect sergeants to show up on calls and
right. Oversee
it.
Yeah,
I want now on calls that we can't go to, the expectation, which we started just recently, is instead of just canceling a call, we expect the sergeant to call the complainant back and make a note in their car computer again for the accountability follow-up piece.
Is there a way you think you could sort of break out the increase in the demand on officers' time, looking at those various factors, like X% is due to increase in crime. Y percent is due to it taking more time to deal with social disorder calls because of the following factors. Z percent is due to increased accountability measures that have this kind of impact on time.
You know, you could measure anything under the sun, so we'll give it a try. The reason why I say that, when I was in detectives for our homicide detail on how to be more efficient with homicide detectives responding to deaths, you think that would be pretty straightforward. I have an academic study that's broken down into 298 variables, and that's one crime category that one group of people go to. So I will look into it, but...
Also, OMF's done... Budget Office has done some number crunching on these issues as well. So we'll try to, maybe from both sources, pull that apart a bit more,
sure.
Assuming we can, getting at least pensive head nodding from...
we'll see what's there.
We'll see what we can. So I appreciate the questions. We're almost done with the slides that were covered in the Gator session that we had. The response time... is almost up to 6 minutes now, and that's responding to priority calls, not the non-emergency calls. And then the next slide, which again, we've talked about a little bit, with expected retirements and just attrition from our hiring and retiring waves that are natural. Yes, sir.
Can we take just a moment to define what we mean by priority calls? And I'll give you an example. Because I'm not sure the public knows where that line is, and sometimes things that we observe don't fit neatly into categories. The other day I was walking from City Hall to a meeting, and there were two young people. They had their gear on their backs, right on Broadway, having a very animated discussion. At one point, the gentleman put his hands in a kind of a menacing way on the woman. I looked around, and there were three or four people on their cell phones, texting, calling. So that's pretty, you know, that's what you would expect. So on the face of it, is that a priority call, or is that a call that goes somewhere and is processed later?
So in that scenario, Boeck, I think, does a very wonderful job of triaging these calls as they come in. One of the metrics that they use is, based on what those four folks with their cell phones, let's assume they all call 911. If there's an expectation that violence could occur or is occurring or could likely occur in a very, very short order, that would be a high priority call. As their four folks are calling in the 911 and those two individuals just separated and walked away, then it would not be. It might still be a call. We just try to go to contact the individuals and see what happened. But since they're taking divergent paths and the propensity for violence has diminished or we don't think it's imminent, that would not be a priority call. So generally speaking, priority calls, you're all aware that officers have computers in their cars. The priority calls get dispatched by voice immediately. The lower level non-priority calls will get shuttled off to the car computer, and officers just take those as they can.
I think one of the challenges we have is that human nature being what it is, people may sometimes up-triage the call in order to get service.
And they do.
I know that happens nationally, not just here, but someone might add a dramatic flourish if they want a police officer in order to get into the priority call category.
Yeah, you're exactly correct.
Thank you.
So the next slide, this will be our last slide that's redundant from the Gator session, is again our projected hiring needs. So in the next 5 years, we have to hire approximately 385 members to the force in order to keep up with attrition. It averages out to 75, 77 or so per year. The problem with that number is our average number of annual hires is only 25.
So could you, in the future, give me this table showing the retirements and other separations for the previous years? Because we only have that data for now projected. I'd like to know how many vacancies did you have, how many retirements and other separations for 11 to 15.
Going backwards in time? Sure, we can get
that
for you. So I apologize, that was kind of quick overview of our Gator session and where we are. So the next slide, and as we talk unit by unit, again, a little bit granular detail, is I'm going to hand it off to the various assistant chiefs who have these divisions under their command. What we need to do, I don't think this is an option in my mind, is dial back some of the staffing in what we refer to as a specialty units, not all of them, but some of them, and we'll get into that, for the purpose of putting officers back on the street. I believe now at the Police Bureau, of no fault of anybody, there's some core service that we're simply just not doing today due to staffing levels and some other factors. What we want to do is to realign some officers and specialty units, put them back in patrol to do our fundamental first core service of answering 911 calls. Each successive slide talks about each division in more and more detail, and I will pass on as we go. At the end, we can talk about some strategies we're exploring, some quick, mid, and long-term goals, as well as some other budgetary issues we're trying to tackle, because we're spending overtime at quite the high rate right now. So we have to keep that in mind, too. So the first unit we'd like to talk about is our Drugs and Vice Division. So that slide, how these work, is on the far left column, has officers and sergeants. It actually talks about what our authorized strength is, what the actual strength is, because not all of them are fully staffed today, and then our target of how many we want to realign to patrol, and then the proposed actuals, that would be what was left in the unit. And we can talk about the essential functions and the realignment impact. And we can go into as much detail as you want, but for your information, we needed, in my opinion, to get fairly granular for you so you have a good understanding of what we're trying to do.
Chief, a couple of years ago, we talked to Captain Krueger about how Drugs and Vice's responsibilities are sort of, and to what percentage of what Drugs and Vice does is going after people for drugs because they're really involved in violence, and what percentage is trying to interrupt the supply of drugs. And he at that time said he thought it was about 50-50. As you know, my view is that trying to interrupt the supply of drugs is fruitless. So I was curious as to what you think the breakdown is now. To what extent is the Drugs and Vice Division going after people for drugs because really we're concerned about violence? And what percentage is just going after drug dealers trying to interrupt drug dealing?
Yeah, so again, I don't know the, I'd hate to even guess at percentage breakdowns. And I'm going to let Assistant Chief Wagonet start talking about the Drugs and Vice Division. But if you look at the essential functions on your slide deck for Drugs and Vice, only one truly talks about major narcotics investigations. And I think there is a responsibility of the Police Bureau to stop large amounts of drugs coming into the city when in my opinion, it truly impacts young adults and youth. But I'll turn over to Assistant Chief Wagonet to talk about the Drugs and Vice Division in greater detail.
Good morning. Assistant Chief Matt Wagonet, Investigations Branch. To kind of answer your question, Commissioner, the primary focus of Drugs and Vice Division is twofold. It's going to be the drug interactions and intervention techniques, which is going to be their primary focus. With those interactions and interventions is going to be the subsequent resolution of preventing violent crime and preventing theft and other criminal activities and empires within the city. But also, a big part of the Drugs and Vice Division that really services the Police Bureau are the subject matter experts that we have within the division in the technical area, in the investigations area, and as far as accountability for being the clearinghouse for our CSIs, our confidential reliable informants, and the evidence funds for the rest of the Police Bureau as far as the accounting and making sure that everything is accounted for the PPB. Our proposed cuts is to take one technician, one officer from the HIT team, the HIDA interaction or interdiction team, one liquor licensing officer, and one DEA liaison, as well as one supervisor.
Suppose that there was a decision that we are no longer going to try to interrupt the supply of drugs because we just don't think that works. What would that lead you to do in terms of staffing for the Drugs and Vice Division?
Well, it would be very difficult in the sense that some of these other divisions that we'll get into, we have subject matter experts in them as well, but they can take their subject matter expertise out to the street, the traffic division, the tactical operations division. The Drugs and Vice Division needs this centralized hub to continue their training, to continue their contacts with the federal agencies, and to assist our other investigators, our homicide investigators, our robbery investigators, our gang enforcement investigators with that expertise, because bar none, they have the best technical support, technical expertise than any other division in our police bureau, and they are the best in surveillance. And coming from tactical operations myself, I know that my gang enforcement team officers use the Drugs and Vice Division on countless surveillance missions and warrant missions because of their ability to do this so efficiently and effectively. If they were to go to the street, that would be lost.
Didn't I see later on that you're talking about cutting tactical operations significantly?
Yeah, do you want to move on to that one? Or okay. So if you'll all remember last year when we had our record number GVRT, gang violence response team responses to gang shootings, it was in May, I believe, that we pulled six officers and a supervisor from the street to supplement the afternoon shift gang enforcement team. Our proposal here is to take those five officers now, one officer has already gone back to the street, and a supervisor. Again, this is the uniform afternoon shift officers. They work gang enforcement. They know the people. They make the contacts. They know everybody that's in that world, even to include the DA's office. So they work very closely with them. So for them to go back to the street would be a minimal hit in the sense that they would still do gang enforcement work. They would also take calls for service. As the captain over there, it was difficult to tell these folks that they were probably going to be going to the street because of the way that our staffing is diminishing. Seems like every year, at least every year, seems like every month. But I told them at the end of the day, we take 911 calls. And the gang enforcement stuff, it's very, very important. And for them to take 911 calls and to work gang enforcement, I think would be the best of both worlds in the situation that we're in right now.
So your next slide, Mike Leloff Services Branch is personnel, which is really the number one division right now to get people hired and into the Portland Police Bureau. So the biggest strategy here is to take police officers and put them on the street, and we're going to right behind that is hire an additional three non-sworn limited term background because there's an existing list. And so you'll see eight authorized, five actual. We're going to actually take one, put them back to the street, and continue with the commitment to get 20 backgrounders, but we're just going to reduce the sworn members and increase the non-sworn members. So there should be minimal impact.
So I was reading through the 2011 Task Force on Business Optimization, which I know then Lieutenant Marshman was serving on. One of the suggestions was to charge a fee for applications. Have we done that?
I'm sorry?
A charge of fee for people who are applying to the police bureau so that, because the study said that if you charge a fee for, then you get fewer applications to deal with and still have the same number of people actually applying and being interviewed.
So we are examining all our systems. If I understand, we're examining all the systems and processes now. It simply is taking too long to get into the Portland Police Bureau. So we're looking from the beginning to the end. Yesterday we had a discussion about it needs to be 6 months to get in and not 12 or 13 or 14 months. And so we're looking at all our systems. Tomorrow I'm having another discussion about one of the potential barriers for people to get into the police bureau.
But that, my question was, do we charge a small application fee?
Yes.
Oh. Yeah. No, we don't. So I know the fire bureau who... they took a recent application test. A few thousand people take the test. To me, that seems reasonable to charge an application fee. We only have a couple hundred people take our test. So we're cognizant of removing every single barrier possible to get a qualified applicant pool. So at this point, no, we're not charging a fee.
Well, it's kind of counterintuitive, but the study showed that you narrow it down to people applying who actually really want the job rather than folks who are just kind of tossing their hat into any pool.
Yeah, I remember that business optimization work we did. It was a lot of that was more funding based. So I understand your comment. It does seem a little bit counterintuitive. But right now, if we make efficiencies in our hiring system, I would just hate to lose a qualified, specifically a minority applicant because they couldn't produce a $25 application fee.
Thank you.
So the following slide is the region sustainment team. This is a difficult position that we're in. We have 40 different agencies, but again, one of our solutions is take the police officers, put them on the street, and come in behind that and take and bring that into non-sworn work and hire professional staff to do that work. The region is an incredibly expensive investment that we've made regionally. We need to keep that work going, but realigning police officers to do police work and non-sworn professional staff to do that work.
So real quickly on the criminal intelligence unit, we currently have 5 officers assigned to this unit. We want to pull 1 officer. It would reduce our abilities to put as many intelligence bulletins out, but we would still maintain the JTTF, and we would still be able to share responsibilities among the 4 remaining officers. It would be taxing, but again, these discussions that we've had for probably the last 4 or 5 weeks have been very intensive and very thoughtful, and having a police officer on the street versus losing an officer in the criminal intelligence unit was beneficial, and so that's what we pulled this 1 officer from.
Do we currently have more than 1 officer assigned to the JTTF?
I believe so. I believe we have 2. Yes.
It seems like, while we have such a shortage, that I understand the council's decision was to have somebody representing us, but if it could be for a period of time that only 1 officer would be doing that while the others back out in patrol, I'd like you to consider that.
And I believe that would be the next step to this process, correct? Yeah, that definitely could come from the JTTF as well.
Strategic Services Division, there's 2 officers remaining in the Crime Analyst Unit. What we have done is we've grown our non-sworn capacity there. We're hiring some very intelligent master degrees. And so taking the 2 officers, realigning them, same thing, put officers to doing police work. And behind that, we'd hire 2 more. We have a limited term recruitment going on right now, so no loss. About a 6-month loss in data, but I think with who we have staff there now, we'll be able to do okay there.
So for the district attorney investigators, since recent memory, we've had 3 officers over at the district attorney's office. I've had some discussions with Rod Underhill and Jeff Howes. And if you'll notice the very bottom there, the DA's office may not be amenable to this change. I can tell you that they're not. But there are options that are potentially on the table. I understand that Multnomah County, Gresham, and Troutdale pay for the services that they financially provide the DA's office instead of offering an individual. So we're looking to pull 1 out of the 3. And this will be some ongoing discussions with the district attorney's office as to how that will happen and what that will look like.
Okay. Traffic Division. Good morning. Chris Uehara, Assistant Chief over the Operations Branch. I oversee the 3 precincts as well as the Traffic Division and the Youth Services Division. So one of the early conversations we had was we didn't want to take from operations to help operations, basically, in essence, hurt operations in order to help it. But as we looked at our realignment figures and our numbers, we could not help but end up at the Traffic Division and make a huge ask, which is 7 officers from that division, especially in light of, as everybody's well aware of, the 3 fatalities that we've had over the past 5 days here in the city of Portland, 1 as recent as just last night. So it's really difficult to have that conversation about taking traffic officers away, especially with Vision Zero with the city of Portland and our participation in trying to keep as many, try to reduce and eliminate traffic fatalities. But the number ended up being 7, and 1 sergeant that we're proposing to go back to patrol. And then lastly, I also have the Mounted Patrol Unit, which works out of Central Precinct. And we're authorized six. We actually have four there, and we're going to take two officers out of the division. We're going to keep the Mounted Patrol Unit because of all of the various positive community engagement pieces that it brings. I'm sitting next to two former MPU officers, both the chief and Assistant Chief Wagonet, and I can tell you that as far as being visual and being out there with the community, people who may not even like the police will come up to the horses and have a conversation with officers while they pet the horse. While that may look on the surface as something very minuscule, it's huge because it gets the conversation going and the dialogue between the police officers and the community. The horse division also, what we're looking at is the two officers that rotate back into patrol, we would have them, it would be up to the precinct commander at Central, but we would ask that they allow the two officers that come off of the horses to go back on the horses periodically and kind of do a rotational piece so that they keep up their skill set.
Chief, going back to traffic for a second, I note that one of the notes is it might affect the ability of traffic officers to staff PBOT fixed radar program. And that obviously just means what it says, and that concerns me. But also, what about the manned vans that you've always had? Will it reduce your ability to staff manned vans with speed cameras?
So you're talking about photo radar vans?
Right.
That's going to be a decision that I'm going to have a conversation with Captain Krebs and see where the cuts are going to come from. It's very difficult, again, in the sense that if we're taking seven officers from various areas of the traffic division, when a lot of them are out there doing proactive education and enforcement work, where do you take from so that you bleed the least, I guess, would be the question at the end of the day.
Chief, the menu you're giving us, I sort of look at all these choices you're presenting us with, and in a sense, you're asking us to pick our poison, because there's going to be no community support for any particular cut. You're giving us a menu because you're allowing us to see the totality of potential impacts. And you're giving us the information to make some decisions about how we address a couple of major issues in the pipeline. One of the things that I anticipate we're going to hear from after this hearing is that while some of these teams can be scaled back or reconfigured, there might be some teams that can be eliminated altogether without doing violence to the overall mission of the Bureau. I don't want to pick a fight on mounted patrol because others have made their arguments pro and con. I just want to make sure I have the information. So if we were to suspend the mounted patrol unit, that is, transfer everybody over and cease functioning as a department, so the overhead costs of maintaining the animals and housing them and all the other costs, what would be the savings?
Now's the time to look at my OMF partners.
I believe the Mounted Patrol's budget is in the neighborhood of $800,000 to $1 million. Most of that is staff. I am not sure how much the rental is, so I could get back to you. I think the real question would be if the rental agreement has any contractual obligations, or if the expectation would be if the Bureau is keeping the horses and continuing the care of the horses during the time the unit is suspended.
Right. And what's the amount of money we get from private sources to supplement the Mounted Patrol budget?
The agreement with the Friends of the Mounted Patrol was for FY 2013-14 and FY 15-16. I do not believe they are contributing anything more, and I would need to double-check that with police fiscal to be sure.
So, Chief, I am not officially recommending a course of action because I have found that even when we think out loud in these forums, people then start going off on making wild assumptions about where we are on the underlying issue. But the purpose of a work session is to have a conversation. And one of the things that concerns me about a number of these proposals is that we're essentially thinning the soup, and it's going to have an impact on, in my view, on public safety and the public when they find out that the calls aren't being responded to with the same kind of promptness or that we've made some very tough calls is probably going to be upset. So we need to just weigh that and balance all of our options. There are, I don't think anyone here is going to suggest that you eliminate a number of these areas in terms of functions. But I do think at some point they're going to come back to the question about whether the mounted patrol unit is a nice to have or a must have. And I don't want to debate that here, because I understand people of goodwill have strong views on both sides. But at some point I think we may need to have some options that go beyond just thinning the soup to understand where we could fundamentally restructure our priorities.
No, a very good point, and I don't disagree with anything you said. I mean, I really, truly do appreciate your time today, because you have high-level positions, and we are getting granular talking about one person and one van for one job, and unfortunately, we're at that point, and we are trying to thin the soup. What we're trying to do is thread and needle multiple ways. What we haven't got to yet is you know, we didn't touch the Family Services Unit or the Youth Services Unit. It's very, very hard to prioritize these, and I can make business cases for everything. So I think we are now at a time where we're truly cutting into core services and what we want to do for 21st century policing. My fear is that this action that we'll take doesn't bridge the gap, and I'll have to come back in the spring, and then the conversation will be what the visions, not just one, what the visions do you want to cut? I'm keeping my fingers crossed that this strategy works.
And that's I want to add to that conversation. That's why this is explicitly a thin-the-soup strategy rather than a make-budgetary-choices strategy, for a couple of reasons. One, this isn't a budget decision. I mean, I don't want to sound too cavalier about this, but money isn't the issue. We have 69 authorized positions that don't have people in them. So saving money is not the problem we need to solve. Secondly, the thin the soup strategy makes more sense than some other options, if we think we're going to bottom out that curve of understaffing and start climbing again. In other words, if these positions were all fully staffed, we wouldn't be having this conversation. So that's a big if, obviously, and there are lots of variables about whether and how fast we do reverse that curve and start climbing up again. But a thin-the-soup strategy makes a lot of sense in any situation like this, if you think it is a temporary condition, not a trend. And obviously we all hope that. Can I go back? Now that we're diving into questions, can I go back? I had a chance to spend some time with the command staff about this presentation, about these options, obviously. And one that we didn't talk a lot about that I'd like to get you to detail a little more here, and that is the district attorney investigators. And that is, there are all kinds of ways in which the city and the county work together. Sometimes we pay each other to do things. Sometimes we just do our job, whether it's housing or derelict boats in the river or the docks at River Place or this. So I'm certainly prepared, I imagine others here are as well, to have leadership-to-leadership conversations with the county leadership, the board, and the district attorney, and the sheriff, to say, hey, this is an hour of need for the city of Portland. Can you do some extra stuff in the partnership to get us through this difficult patch? So back to this one or anything like it, are there places where, obviously, Mike Reese is in the room, and I won't put him on the spot about this, but not just the sheriff's office with their staff, but the DA's office or anyone else in which, we have a partnership in which there are either expectations coming out of past practice. Well, of course the county's going to do that, or of course the city's going to do that. That may have to be reexamined, or places where they could flex and ameliorate this problem, maybe to a greater extent than one position.
No, Mayor, I agree completely. There's a number of projects right now that the criminal justice partners in the county, police, sheriffs, parole and probation, the courts, criminal defense attorneys, Rod Underhill shop. There's a number of meetings we go to for collaboration purposes, and I think your idea fits into that extremely well. We'll look into that.
This function where we're serving subpoenas and picking up, transporting evidence, Do those functions have to be performed by a sworn position? Some of them, what's?
Apparently they do, sir, they do. One thing that, and you know, in the DA's office defense, they did loan us one of their officers, or one of our officers, for 6 months when we put several other officers back on the street about almost a year ago. It was a financial hit for them, and which I understand. So they are trying to be good business partners, but there are more talks that need to be had in order to convert our paradigms to what must be and to see what we can do to make them the way they need to be today. So I have been told that if we do pull this officer back, then the work that that officer is doing is going to come to us as well. And that may be something that works as well. I don't know exactly how much that is, but that may be something that we can give to the precincts for responsibility, specifically serving subpoenas, if it needs to be a sworn officer.
This one might merit some more work on my office's part as well as yours, but I guess one question I want to leave hanging in the air and answer it if you want to now or later, and that is, how much of this relationship is established in law and how much in custom?
Yeah, there is a statute, so part of this relationship is in law. Now, the specificity of the numbers, in my reading it recently, is not. So we'll have conversations with our local partners.
Other elements of this that folks want to delve into, as I just have here?
Several questions. We got an email from Dan Handelman about an officer who was working outside the Apple store. Do we know how much we have officers doing other jobs?
Yeah.
So the officers that work any of those type of work are hired through the union. That's usually on their days off, and it's an overtime opportunity. They're not assigned by us to work those types of events.
Right. I thought we had a policy that they weren't supposed to do that, and if they're working overtime in a private capacity, perhaps they could be working overtime for us. So it's just something to look at. Also, how many officers do we have doing administrative desk jobs that we got through the recession with those jobs, and perhaps they could go back to being non-sworn officers?
I think we are examining all those. So the chart in the back shows you where all the officers are. I don't have them page numbered. But one more, Andy.
It says 33 admin or injured.
It's titled officer assignment.
Yeah.
And you'll see exactly where all the officers are. So we have had, for example, fleet, we have two officers assigned there, one doing technology and one actually helping fleet build the police cars to our specs. So we have 74 cars that are rolling in this year just for replacements. We've looked at those. One in particular was going to be converted to a non-sworn. The union filed a grievance. We want to re-examine those types of positions again, but kind of being new, we're trying to get through this first phase, which is we're down to 331, but we do want to examine the positions that are can be done by non-sworn professional staff.
Good, that's helpful, thank you. Transit police, can we negotiate a different number of transit police to work with TriMet?
So currently, there's 67 positions over there as a whole, 15 different partners, and currently there is 16 Portland police officers in that role. Again, getting back to one of the philosophies we've talked about over the last month is herding operations to help operations doesn't make sense. So those officers are out on the street in Central Precinct, the Transit Police Central Precinct down at the Steel Bridge, taking about 11,500 issues within the city of Portland. If we pull back from there, then those work items are going to go to the precinct staff, and each one of those 16 positions are paid for at 105% by TriMet. So it was a philosophy decision not to pull those because they're funded fully and in the city of Portland doing work.
Yeah, but to the extent that they're checking if people have fares rather than actually working on crime prevention, that's just a possibility. I'm sure you're looking at everything. In the study from 2011, there was a discussion of transport and how much time officers spent transporting people. Where are we at with, particularly with mental health care and the Unity Center opening the beginning of next year?
So the phase two of the pilot project should start, got a briefing on this yesterday, in the next month or two. So where they will now have AMR do the transports, but they're still going to go to the regular ER hospitals. And then come January, I'm still told it's on time, it'll switch over to Unity Center. So in short order, we'll do a study where, actually not a study, it's more of a flow for the hospitals, how they do their portion of patient care. But hopefully in the next month or two, police officers will just do a transfer of custody, if you will, to AMR, who will do the transport. So that portion will free up some officer time in transport.
And perhaps we could use firefighters in that and the rapid response vehicles for firefighters as well. So just another thing to look at. Regarding the drugs and vice and no longer doing the background checks for only for the liquor licenses, that would require a code change because currently the city delegates to the chief that function. It could potentially be done by non-sworn officers, the background for the liquor licenses, or by the neighborhood response team officers. I just want to make sure that we don't lose that capacity to do the checks for the liquor licenses because we have to go to the state with those. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So, Steve, you may have some other comments as well. I just want to let you know some next steps in terms of my work with the Bureau on this. One, you know, what we haven't talked about, but it's implied and also there on paper, is there are other places that cuts could have been recommended or reassignments could have been recommended where they weren't. Things like school resource officers are untouched because we know their critical importance both in policing and to the community. By and large, I'm content with the areas where they're not making reassignments in this stage of adjustment, but there's still some places in here that I want to look again to comb back through again. This issue of the number of people in administrative functions, fiscal, anywhere where there's a uniformed officer doing work that someone else could do, I'm hungry to keep finding more of those. My second concern about this, again, I think it's good work in a difficult situation, I appreciate it, and it has already been mentioned, that, you know, we're a city that's had a remarkably low number of homicides so far this year, 11. And a very regrettable rate of traffic fatalities, 28, I believe, including the most recent ones so far this year. So cutting the traffic division, even though those officers on patrol would continue to do traffic enforcement, is something that makes me wince a lot. So again, I appreciate the work in progress here. I think it's a good proposal for how to get through this tough patch. Again, as you've heard from the chief, it relies on us actually reversing that curve so that we don't have to go to the next stage of reassignments. But even before we do these, there are a few more places that I want to delve a little more deeply, like these issues with the county, like fiscal and admin. You know, those are areas where I might push a little more.
Well, I very much appreciate you sharing all this information and having this discussion because obviously it's going to affect all of us. What do the school resource officers do during the breaks?
Their school resource officers during the breaks will cover Benson High School summer school program, and then as well as fill in at the precincts and do regular patrol duties. If there's an event that comes out that's community-related involving the youth, we'll push them towards those events also.
And in this chart of officer assignments, do they fall under the youth services?
The youth services division, yes.
Thank you.
You know, we remain really concerned about the issue of gang violence, but we're also holding our breath a little bit in that it appears that the combination of what the Bureau's been doing, what the school resource officers are doing, what the community peace collaborators are doing, what the additional gang outreach workers that we're forcing up with right now, or hiring those people right now, the net effect of all that appears to be very positive in terms of avoiding incidents that otherwise would already be in our list of actual gang violence. Yes, we've had a lot of shots fired. That's terrifying. But thankfully, very few people have been hit by those shots. And there have been a number of incidents, including, for example, last Thursday, where our folks on the street, those gang outreach workers, and our police officers, defused some situations that otherwise might have turned into criminal activity and injury and worse. So the stuff we're doing on the youth front and the gang enforcement front and the gang intervention front, whether it's by police officers or Antoinette Edwards or any of the other partners doing this work, you know, I'm very pleased with how that's going. If you've been to some community peace collaborative meetings lately, you'll see literally we're getting 150 people working together from all over the community, working with the Bureau in a really strong partnership. So that work is something else, like traffic, that I'm loath to disturb, because it appears to be getting a lot of traction with the young people that are most at risk of being serious crime problems later on if we aren't successful.
Yeah, that's definitely one of your legacies. I appreciate the work you've done. Do we have sworn staff doing the public involvement and the public interviews and such?
Referring to our public information officer, Pete? Yeah, with one.
So is that something that could be done by a non-sworn person?
Yes, some agencies do have a non-sworn or professional staff person doing that, yes.
And how many do we have doing recruitment?
We have currently one officer in recruitment.
That's maybe an area where we could put some of the resources saved by not having the positions filled into having a non-sworn group of both people and some money to advertising and a full kind of a widening Kennedy, for the lack of a really enticing come to Portland, stay in Portland. The police are really making large changes and are a good place to work.
Yeah, we are currently working on, we have a recruitment plan actually finalized. We have a way to boost up our recruitment efforts. We have a non-sworn and a sworn. We're looking at other opportunities. We're working on a brand new video, so we are trying to make that robust.
Additional assistance in the form of professional support is something that we're definitely working on. So we're gonna use every avenue we can, including the ones we've used in the past, but also new ones, because we have to up our game. Other questions, issues that you want to get followed up on from this discussion?
I have a couple. One is, we didn't spend much time on the proactive time target, and I wouldn't want to suggest that proactive time is not worthy. In fact, I assume that proactive time includes, for example, the place-based NILOC program, which I think is a great program. But I think looking at this, having a proactive time target of 45% leads to needing 37 more officers than if you had a proactive time target of 40%. And I think that we'd benefit from a sort of explanation of why is that 5% difference in proactive time more important than 37 officers in the specialty units?
So a number of academic studies I've read about proactive time, I mean, there's a little bit of a squishy number how different academics measure proactive time, whether that is self-initiated calls. Some consider that proactive time, so you're doing police work, and some only include purely community engagement. So that is a little bit of a moving target. It's just simply a metric that I think nationally we use to try to figure out the balance of pure law enforcement, which is obviously a role of what we have, versus more community engagement. So it's just a way to have a conversation and judge, forecast the number of personnel you need.
But do you feel like you can say with confidence that if we reduce the proactive time target to 40%, that would have a greater impact on public safety than deleting 37 officers on the specialty units?
Very hard to answer. That was a simple, yes, no question. I guess depends on what this group collectively wants our officers to do and the efficiencies in which we do it and then the outcome measures from that. So, but the bigger, more broad brushstroke answer, I think personally, is that more proactive time officers have the long-term impacts of that, better community trust. Is I could debate that over time you'd actually need less officers if you have community engagement done perfectly, which you'll never get right. So again, I think you need that time on the front end to work on all these other issues we want to work on, accountability and community trust and relationship-based policing. If you do that efficiently and have the community and police work together collaboratively, which everybody here I know wants that to do, then some of the other functions that we are currently doing, you could probably back those off in the future.
The other question I had is, what percentage of patrol officers' time do you think is spent dealing with issues related to homelessness? If we didn't have any people living on the street in Portland, how many fewer FTE would you need?
Well, I wouldn't go for fewer FTE, because if they're not spending that time on that workload, and there's other valuable things they can do. I'd have to look at the call breakdown, which is a little bit hard by call type, the way BOIC does it, to figure out, you know, for example, like a disturbance call could be an issue with houseless individuals for whatever reason, or a disturbance call could be a bar fight. So you have to almost read those calls one by one to figure out what the actual narrative is. So in order to do that, I could probably do a random sample of calls to figure out the time spent, but it's going to be geographic based as well. So percentage wise, off the top of my head right now, I can't give you I would hate to even guess at that number.
The number on it either, but my sense is, particularly obviously in Central and East precincts, there's a substantial amount of work going into those issues and those problems by officers in the patrol districts, out on patrol in those precincts. What's the percentage? It's bigger than the bread box, but I hear you, Steve. I mean, I understand the issue. And if those folks were housed and provided the services and weren't acting out one way or another, that would be a group of calls that we wouldn't be having to deal with.
Well, we realize it's an important issue for the city, so even though we're short-staffed at Central Precinct, we have a two-person outreach car, and that's all those officers do. And the outcome of that work is phenomenal. I think that's two full-time officers' time very, very well spent.
That's sort of the flip side of that, in terms of the positive side. I was out on Hawthorne with Rick DeLand a couple of summers ago, and he was talking to a young man who was homeless but who lived in the neighborhood, and the young man said that, "I don't like police officers, but I like this guy. And if he tells me to do something in terms of getting along with people here on Hawthorne, I'm going to do it." Yeah, that distilled community policing, you know, into a couple of sentences, and showed the value of that proactive time, and also showed that if you build those relationships, whether people are houseless or not, it starts to pay off in ways of avoided problems that are pretty profound.
See, I think it's an important question because, well, I've asked the question before, haven't gotten an answer. I met with folks in the police union a few months ago for about an hour, and we wound up spending most of the hour talking about homeless issues. So I came away from that thinking, are we spending 50% of our police time, or at least the patrol time, dealing with homeless issues? And so I do think that it would be really, it's really important to me to know if we got a handle on the houseless issues, what effect would that have on the police bureau? And when you talk about increased demand on the bureau's time, I mean, given compared to 20 years ago, we have much less crime. Certainly, much less crime per capita. I think much less crime overall, particularly Part One crimes. But that hasn't reduced the demands on the bureau's time because other things are taking up time, and I really like to know if we got a handle on the houseless issue, what would that be? At a certain point, you would think that if we deal with enough societal problems that the police are called upon to deal with, there would be fewer demands on the police bureau. And it seems that reducing the amount of crime hasn't reduced the demands in the police bureau, which is surprising, but seems to be true. I would like to have some idea of if we reduce the houseless demands of the police bureau, what would that mean in terms of the need for future resources?
Flesh that out. I mean, the other piece of that, so there's obviously some follow-up in terms of data we can mine.